Hello everybody, welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, Bahrain Grand Prix edition, a race that's going to be rather difficult to talk about for sure, but we'll do our very best to cover everything that went on Sunday. My name is, of course, Matt, and joining me in the virtual podcast booth is Tommy, the WTF1 founder, and Katie, the WTF1 editor. Guys, it's been a very weird weekend. How are you both?
Not too bad. It's been a strange week, and we've had plenty of news as well, so
yeah, feeling a bit emotionally exhausted, but also very thankful that we're not talking about worse things on this podcast.
Absolutely. It's definitely something that shocked everybody, but as you say, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. But we will cover all of that very shortly, because we're now going to dive into a couple of talking points that's been thrown into the nethersphere, one of them being Lewis Hamilton testing positive for COVID-19, which I'm sure everybody will have heard or seen by the time this podcast goes out. But he won't race at Sakhir, which means, firstly, we give our best wishes to Lewis. That he says he only has mild symptoms, doesn't he? So hopefully he'll be on the mend soon. But also has given an opportunity for someone else to race one of the best cars ever built, which is pretty big.
Yeah, ever built. If 2020 couldn't get any crazier, here we are with Lewis Hamilton. It's quite funny that everyone said that, you know, it's just the car, anyone will be able to win in that car, so let's see.
Because the theories are going to be tested now, aren't they?
I did see a few people actually mention it on Twitter, which was quite funny, is all the people that comment on Twitter, you know, like Barry3258, that says, oh, even I could win in Hamilton's Mercedes, that just for the banter for the last two races, Mercedes would just put a random person and see how they do to prove the theory wrong.
Definitely. Like you say, there's a good selection of people that it could be. Stoffel van Dorn is, in my opinion, the likely favourite. You know, he is their official test and reserve driver, so it makes logical sense to put him in the car. But there's also George Russell, Nico Hülkenberg. There's a list of drivers probably as long as anyone's arm that would love to drive that car. So we will see who they put in it.
Yeah, it does seem like Van Dorn will be the top prospect. And also, you know, people are going, oh, no, but we want George Russell. I mean, Stoffel van Dorn, I know that he was trounced, I suppose, by Alonso, but he was a huge potential coming up the field. You know, he absolutely smashed GP2. I think it was called GP2 at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
It was.
And he was, you know, one of the hot shots that everybody thought would be amazing in Formula One. It didn't work out that way, but this could be a potential redemption for old Stoffel.
Yeah, it could. Because he replaced Alonso in 2016 in Bahrain, of all places, actually, when Alonso had his mysterious crash, I think it was, in testing. And yeah, he got to replace him. No, it was when he did the barrel roll in Melbourne before everyone in the comments corrects me. Van Dorn drove an amazing race there, and then obviously he got put into the car. And having Alonso as your teammate is difficult, to say the least. And obviously he got trounced by Alonso, who is a bit of a teammate killer, like, you know, like Max Verstappen, I guess, that we've seen. But yeah, it would be amazing to see just someone new in that car. Obviously, like you say, we wish Lewis well and hope he comes back soon. But it's an incredible opportunity to see what someone can do in that car. And I know, like you say, everyone's pleading for George Russell, but then I guess what happens is that is difficult, because then Williams would need to find someone. It's a bit of a knock-on replacement. So I think, like Katie said, Van Dorn is probably a safe bet.
Yeah, I think so. He's currently doing Formula E pre-season testing, so he's already had a pre-existing flight to go to Sakhir to help with Mercedes this weekend. But yes, we will see. It's certainly an exciting prospect, and I'm sure Van Dorn or whoever's put in that car will do a stellar job.
Yeah. And the other bit of news that, a lot of people had seen and it had been rumoured, and it was pretty much confirmed because of his dad taking a share in the team, but Nikita Mazepin being confirmed at Haas F1 team for next year. An interesting character, let's put it that way. And I think, you know, it's probably not the most popular decision ever. You know, a lot of people wanted to see Callum Ilott in Formula One. But in terms of Nikita Mazepin as an entertainment factor, I think he will be an interesting element to the grid next year, in the sense that what I've seen from him in Formula 2 is that he's not scared to go for a move. So we could see some rather heated moments, couldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to him, obviously, he's one of those drivers where, unfortunately, something that happened in the past and people won't forgive him for, which, if you don't know, is a tangle, shall we say, with Callum Ilott, which gave him a race ban in Formula 3 when he, I guess I won't beat around the bush, he essentially punched Ilott in the face.
Was that a pun?
And gave him, yeah.
Beat around the bush.
Punched Ilott in the face, gave him a black eye. So it's probably even harsher to see for Callum Ilott that Mazepin has got the drive
his
over him.
Enemy, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. But to be fair to him, you know, if we're talking about the racing, he has surprised me, to be honest, in Formula 2 this year. He's has been pretty good. And the last race,
compared to Giotto as well, he's kind of.
Yeah, he's nowhere in that car, to be fair. Yeah. And the last race, him battling Schumacher, who is likely to be his teammate, you know, it's an amazing battle. And he's, to be honest, like when you just watch that race, you think it could be quite an exciting prospect. It's just whether Haas can, you know, come up the field, because essentially they're just racing at the back. So. We'll see.
I think it's also very easy to look at somebody like Mazepin and go, you know, he's only there for the money, his dad's rich, all this kind of thing. But everybody had the same opinions of Lance Stroll, and he certainly has some impressive performances in his F1 career. So although I'm not going to, you know, shy away from it, there are other people that I'd rather have in that seat. It will still be interesting to see how he gets on next year at Haas.
It will indeed. Now let's turn our attentions to the Bahrain Grand Prix from Sunday and some three-word race reviews. So Sam underscore Skirving says, thank you, Halo. Neil underscore not underscore Neil underscore. Actually, I missed an underscore as well. My heart stopped. And Justin underscore Parsons 25. Glad Grosjean's okay. I think that's pretty much the only takeaway really from the Bahrain Grand Prix was the Grosjean incident. And to talk about that, it sounded like I was doing a throw on a BBC News show. Katie, with the three-word race review, we're going to start with you.
Yes, yeah, so my three-word race review is It's a Miracle, which is obviously relating to Grosjean's accident, the crash that he had. I'm not alone in thinking that when we saw that unfold live, I think we all instantly assume the worst. It's one of the worst crashes I've seen, not just in F1 or in motorsport, but just ever. You know, to have a car veer off the track at that speed and then burst into flames was so shocking for, you know, us to see, because the fuel cells are not designed to just implode like that and cause such a huge fireball. But yes, there were lots of things that were in place that undoubtedly saved Romain Grosjean's life, the most obvious being the halo. You know, something that's only been introduced in the last couple of years. And, you know, I've spoken to drivers before the halo was introduced into F1, one of them being Pierre Gasly. I spoke to him in 2016, and he said, if you don't like open cockpits, go do something else. Halo shouldn't be in F1. And my goodness, I'm sure that his thoughts have changed. I'm sure everybody's thoughts have changed after the fact that the halo saved Romain Grosjean's life at the weekend. But there have been people online, Lucas Degrassi being one of them, saying, stop calling it a miracle. It's not a miracle. It's due to all of the health and safety things that have been put in place that Romain Grosjean was able to walk away from that accident. To that, I would say, you can probably call it what you want to call it, but there are so many variables with an accident like that. You know, the barrier, something, a shard of barrier could have come off and pierced through, you know, something on Grosjean's body, or the seat belts might have come on, like not been able to come undone properly. Or, you know, the Ross Brawn said that he didn't think that the fuel had completely, you know, gone up in flames, that it could have only just been a few, you know, kilograms of fuel that had gone up. There's just so many parts to it that it is a miracle. And my goodness, I am just so grateful that on Sunday evening I wasn't having to write, you know, an article, an obituary to Romain Grosjean, which, I mean, we love and adore every single driver on that grid. You know, none of us ever want to see them get hurt in those cars. We love watching the race. We know it's dangerous, but none of us ever wish harm on another driver. And so for him to be able to walk away and know that he's okay and that he's recovering in hospital, with ambitions to come back and race in Abu Dhabi, which is just amazing. But I know I've taken quite a lot of time there to talk through my three-word race review, but Quite an emotional topic to talk about.
Yeah, it is indeed. I'm still not over it, to be honest. Even you just speaking about it there, it just kind of hits different. And it's very, as you say, Katie, you know, watching that unfold and seeing the, I think it was the shockingness of that of the incident, with the fact that it just went up in flames as soon as he hit the barriers. Because we've seen many shocking crashes, you know, cars in absolute bits, but because it went up in flames, it was just a horrifying moment. And as you say, it was one of those times where you just think that can't be good. And then there was the delay, and the cameras weren't going on the car, and you just know that you know, it's not looking great. And you know, everybody was on the edge of their seats trying to find out what happened with Roman. But back to your it's a miracle. I'm of both sides. I will say yes, it is a miracle, because as you say, there's so many variables. The fact that he could have hit that barrier and been knocked out, and then he's just sat in those flames, and you know, his fireproof suit lasts in those kind of conditions for 20 seconds, which is pretty much what he was in there for, and his gloves for 10 seconds. Like, if he's knocked out, no one can get to him because of how sheer forceful those flames were. But yeah, at the same time, I can understand how some people are almost getting offended, shock at social media, about the fact that, you know, that people are calling it a miracle when there's so much safety in Formula One nowadays. And, you know, it's completely testament to the halo. I think the halo did its job so unbelievably well to pierce through that barrier and to keep Romain Grosjean safe. But at the same time, you can also say the barrier could have been on top of where Grosjean was sitting. Like, there's so many different things, but the halo certainly helped the situation. You cannot deny that. And, you know, quoting Gasly from 2016, you know, I'm sure he, as you say, feels very, very differently about that now. And the debate's over, in my opinion. Thomas Sheehan comes in and says, isn't it so stupid there was such a debate about the halo? Retrospect is great, I know. I don't think there is a debate anymore. I don't think we need to say that there was a debate going into this race or even this season. But, of course, lots of people don't like change. They don't like the fact that Formula One's getting safer. Oh, my God, I can't see the drivers. But then you have these countless moments already with the halo introduced that actually have saved drivers' lives.
Yeah, we all thought that Gasly won't be alone in that. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I've always been pro halo, because you saw how incredible the cars in 2017 looked, and it was such a shock when that halo was announced. And I know a big factor was the fact that a lot of people were like, well, you know, what's it going to do? Because there's still all this space around the side of it, and a lot of people didn't really understand it. But we have now seen the perfect example. I mean, the debate was over when Leclerc was saved in 2018 Spa, I think it was the first real proper example where you were like, well, that's, you know, serious injury or death if he doesn't have the halo there. So the debate pretty much ended there. But I mean, even Roman himself was quite critical of the halo when it was first introduced, and he said it made him feel sick and he didn't like it. But it's the first thing he addressed on the video that he posted from the hospital. And he said, you know, the halo saved my life debate, and that's it. The debate's over.
Definitely. Like you say, giving examples there, even since the halo's been introduced, you know, you can count examples on one hand of the amount of times that it's saved a driver's life, or at least prevented serious injury. And I'm with you. When the halo was first introduced, you know, I'm somebody, I think I'm right here saying that we're all either born in the 90s or maybe just late 80s. I don't want to offend either of you.
80s,
okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. 90s. Yeah, we've all grown up having F1 as, you know, these open cockpit racing, and we've seen accidents happen. But for, you know, this metal object to be chucked on the car, I think a lot of us were quite sceptical, thinking, well, you know, how come F1 has managed to survive for 65 years or whatever being open cockpit, and now we're chucking this on here? Like, and I can see why quite a lot of drivers were against it, but, oh, it's just, it's done its work, hasn't it? And it's something that when the accident happened and it was red flagged, I called up my mum and I explained the situation to her, and that how lucky Roman was to be alive. And I'm not going to get emotional now because I've got all of it out at the weekend. But I said to her, it feels like Jules didn't die for nothing, which is, yeah, it was very, it's just chilling really when you think about it. But
on that, yeah. Actually, Katie, I don't know if you saw this, but on French TV when they were covering it, Jules Bianchi's mother actually messaged French TV but essentially did a message to say that, you know, it's very sad, but almost that Jules didn't die in vain now because of what was introduced, that the fact that the halo was introduced after Bianchi's death saved Roman's life. There's no question about it. And yeah, it's very touching to see that from, you know, the Bianchi family.
Yeah, incredibly touching. Yeah, there's not much more to say on that, I don't
no.
think. Let's go to the next question. At Sherda, was there something wrong with the Haas design that it split like that? Or would that have happened to almost any car? Now, to be fair, I was shocked as well when the car split in half. I think a lot of people that didn't know about the way in which the cars are structured in terms of... Well, I think it didn't split in the right way. It's supposed to split, but it didn't split in the right way because that's why the fuel went up. Like, this shouldn't have gone up in flames. It should have split to dissipate some of the energy, but it pierced something or other. Obviously, there's going to be an investigation into it where some fuel was spilt and then, you know, went up in flames. So the split is right, but the way it split was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially that. I mean, the key thing, which I'm sure everyone has seen by now, and we did a video about the, you know, the amazing work that the FIA have done, is that survival cell, while it looked shocking to see that car, you could barely pick out that it was a Formula One car, but all that whole structure around the cockpit and you know, the halo was all intact. And like you say, that the fact that that was intact and all the bits around it meant that Roman could get out, because, you know, even if he'd like broken his leg and he couldn't get out the car, like you say, there's the fire, or he's, you know, passed out, there's all those factors. But the fact that the whole structure around him, that's what, you know, helped him be able to get out.
No, definitely. I mean, the last time we saw an F1 car split into two was at Monaco in 1991. And I'm with you. When I saw the car split into two, your first thought is, oh my goodness, that doesn't look right. That's not normal. But then, and I'm not in any kind of way, this is literally just going from what I can remember in like GCSE science, but when you have an accident, whether that's in a car or, you know, you fall off your bike or something, there are things that are in place to absorb the energy, because you're going, he went into that wall at 53G at 137 miles an hour. And so rather than the energy just being completely all absorbed by the survival cell, or, you know, if the car hadn't split into half, it stresses me out thinking about what the rear end of the car could have done. It could have caused a concertina effect, or, you know, it's good that it was able to split because the driver was separated from, like, the fuel cell, for example, and things like that. So there is plenty of things that have done good in that the car split into two like that. But yeah, it did definitely stress me out when I saw it. And even the amazing medical team that were first on the scene along with the marshal to help Roman out of that fiery mess, you know, they said they arrived at the scene and they could see the car had split into two, and, you know, the end part of the car was facing the wrong way. And so for them, they probably were thinking, oh my goodness, what are we dealing with here? But it looks like that was an intentional thing, that the car should be able to split into two like that to sort of dissipate the energy.
Yeah, but just split the wrong way, or split differently to how it should have, because, as I mentioned, the fire shouldn't have happened. And I was also seeing that I don't even think 53G was what he went into the wall with. That was the deceleration. So apparently I've been seeing messages saying that the impact would have actually been higher, but I don't know. I don't understand G's or science in general, really. But yeah. Either or, it was a big impact. I think we can say that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next question. David J. Hooks. There are rumours that Grosjean may be going to IndyCar next year. Do you think he might call it a day after today and count himself lucky? I mean, these racing drivers are different breeds, right? We've said it many, many times, you know, whether it's paying tribute to a driver that we've lost and then, you know, basically taking in the fact that someone has died and then going racing, or if it's racing after seeing such a huge impact like that. These guys are built differently. Their mentality and their strength is beyond comprehension. So from what I've heard, that Grosjean should be racing Abu Dhabi, or he wants to at least race in Abu Dhabi, which, I mean, if it was me, I probably wouldn't do that, but that's not me. This is Grosjean. Yeah. This is a Formula One driver. But it seems like, yeah, he wants to race in the finale and maybe bow out in a better way than the crash he had in Bahrain.
Exactly. Formula One drivers are different breeds, aren't they? I mean, that was my first reaction, like when he was out and okay, that, you know, your wife and kids would never want you to step in a race car again. But all the drivers, and I know this is something that Daniel Ricciardo felt quite strongly about with the replays, but they were all watching that, and then they had to jump in their cars and go racing again, knowing that, almost just having like a moment where they realized, yeah, that happens, that could happen, and this guy's made this amazing escape from such a horrible crash, and now they're watching it on telly and I've got to get back in the same race cars and go driving. So yeah, I saw Roman wanted to do the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix and bow out, I guess, in a better way. I guess it just all depends on how his burns heal and whether he's able to do that and get the go ahead. But like you say, it'd be a nicer way to end your career if he can, you know, just have a good race.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, watching the Channel 4 coverage here in the UK, David Coulthard and Mark Webber present that, and Steve Jones was very much saying, oh my goodness, I would never want to step in a car again after witnessing, you know, after experiencing something like that. But DC was saying, you know, like you say, racing drivers are completely different. They're not normal. They're very weird in the sense that they're so arrogant and, you know, self-obsessed that they just have a different mindset. They will think, actually, I want to get back in the car, which to us mere mortals, we think, what, you know, I'd be thinking, there's more to life than this. I'm going to go and retire in my nice Swiss chalet on the slopes yeah. with my kids and my wife and just end it there. But Roman Grosjean, I think he'll probably want to bow out at least from his F1 career in a better way than what we saw. But like you say, with his injuries, whether he can or not is another matter. As for IndyCar, I don't know. He might give it a go, but I mean, he's spoken before, especially in Drive to Survive, about the psychological damage that happened to him when he was involved in the 2013 Belgian Grand Prix. And he has said, you know, he's had to seek help from a therapist about it. And he's actually very open in discussing his mental battles that he's suffered. So I wouldn't be surprised if after this being like the second serious thing that he's involved in, that maybe he will just say, you know what, enough's enough. But who knows? Only Grosjean knows that at the moment. But obviously we'd like to see him back at Abu Dhabi, at least not even racing, just in person, so we can, you know, be able to celebrate this F1 career that he's now sort of bowing out of.
Yeah, I think maybe that they're two different incidents, aren't they? Maybe the first one, and this is pure speculation, and the fact that he maybe needed help because of the fact that he felt like he endangered other people's lives rather than his own. I don't know. I mean, that's just my thoughts. But in terms of him bowing out and things like that and coming back, it's an addiction, isn't it? These Formula One drivers are addicted to the thrill, the speed, and to race. So I'm not surprised if Roman doesn't bow out, in the sense that, because he craves going back in the car, even after a big incident like that. So it'll be interesting to see either way. And I'm sure it's more likely than not, if Grosjean is cleared medically, that he'll be back in Abu Dhabi to bow out in a way that he would like to. Tommy, let's go to your three-word race review.
So mine is, again, along the lines of the Grosjean incident, and that is never stop innovating. And this is just about really just all the technical innovations and that we almost take for granted now. So if I think back, I saw a lot of posts about in the 70s, there was an incident and it meant that the medical car was introduced to drive at the back of the field. And obviously those guys were straight on the case, which is, you know, a heroic thing to be able to be there immediately, and the first thing you think of is to run into, you know, flames and help someone, essentially. Senna's crash, things changed as well. Excuse me. Senna's crash, obviously, there was all the technical innovations that came from that, and they built the cockpits around, and then the halo was introduced after Bianchi's crash. And even Karim Chandhok's tweet that you kind of mentioned earlier, Matt, that this year they introduced a race suit that lasts up to 20 seconds rather than 10 seconds, and it was the gloves that actually last 10 seconds of fireproof, which is why his hands were so badly burnt. But it shows that we should just never stop innovating with these safety devices. And the great thing about this is that in the fact that it's a horrible crash, but the great thing is that we now get to learn so much from it, from a driver surviving, not being a fatal crash that we have to learn from.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I'm sure there will be a lot of a big investigation into it all for many reasons. Him going through the barrier, the fire. There's lots of stuff to definitely assess. Metal Caniac Fan says, based on the horrific crash, what additional safety measures would you like to see added in the future to protect and prevent drivers from having this type of crash again? Well, I'm sure that they'll look into the structure of the Haas car and why it broke the way it did, because it did half the job in terms of keeping Romain Grosjean safe, but the fire shouldn't have happened. So I'm sure there'll be something around making sure, or at least trying to minimise the risk of that again. And I think also maybe the barriers, because I know that, well, clearly that barrier wasn't strong enough to withstand such a big crash. And maybe part of that is down to the fact that tracks don't expect a car to go in a certain area because of where it is. You know, you don't expect a car to go in there at 140 miles an hour, but you can't then just assume, because it makes an ass out of you and me.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why I just dropped that pun, but you know, it's you can't just be like, well, this barrier will be sufficient for a 50 60 mile an hour crash if someone spins into it or something. Everywhere has to be protected.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to learn from it, is that you know, the barrier was almost like flat on. You know, normally a barrier sort of like runs down the straight and a driver goes in and hits it on the side. So maybe, you know, they'll look into something like that where there's a risk of a drive, like you say, because these accidents can happen anywhere on the track. I guess they'll probably learn that we can't just assume that something's going to happen. I'm sure in Silverstone.
Yeah, Silverstone with Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, with Kimi Raikkonen. And there was one with Kvyat this year where he went into the barrier that no one expected him to go into at Beckett's, where Kvyat hit the wall. And then they kind of added tyre barriers because they realised, oh, people can go in there. But you have to think that people can crash anywhere on a track, like, they're gonna learn so much from it, and there will be obviously like a massive investigation. I think the biggest learnings will be the fire and why that happened.
Definitely. I think whether that's, you know, the fuel cell that has been pierced, or Romain Grosjean's actually done an interview now with media, and he said about the battery as well, because obviously these are not fully, you know, combustible engines. They are part hybrid, so part electric. He seemed to think that the battery had burst into flames too, which is obviously hugely dangerous. We saw clips afterwards of marshals coming in with, you know, thick gloves and bolt cutters essentially, but probably a bit safer than that, and, you know, cutting through the electric wiring to make sure that wasn't live. But yeah, I mean, as well as the safety precautions with barriers and the way that the car works as well, I think Matt touched upon it, the actual, not uniform, what's it called, like overalls that they have on, the fact that that was changed this year, yes, it made it heavier and some drivers didn't like that, but it's undoubtedly saved Romain Grosjean's life, and hopefully that you know, over the next few years, few decades, however long it might take, there will be materials developed. I mean, they use Nomex and all their stuff at the moment, which is like the fire retardant stuff that, you know, keeps the flames from going through. But hopefully, you know, there could be something developed in the future where you could be on fire for a minute, say, rather than 20 seconds before it starts to melt away. So there's always improvements to be made to make this sport safer. Like we said, we know motorsport is dangerous. We're not stupid, but I don't think anyone would be against people continuously working towards making it safer for when accidents like this do happen, that Grosjean can walk away or whoever it might be.
Absolutely. You know, accidents will always happen and there will always be a risk for these drivers. But I am absolutely of the belief that this sport should be made as safe as possible for these drivers, because they're still going 200 miles an hour. It doesn't take anything away from the show, adding a halo or whatever. I didn't like the aesthetic of it when it first came, but everyone hates change and everyone will speak up about it until we see something like this, an example of where it saved somebody's life, and then that doesn't matter, does it, in terms of what it looks like or how long it's been in or whatever. So next one. Chuck CB, will the FIA address all the safety issues this year? Feels like a year of close calls. The marshal running onto track made me wince. No, I don't think they will. They've kind of addressed any comments from the media as and when they've happened, and they've kind of shrugged them off most times. It seemed like the marshal one was probably just a misjudgment from that particular volunteer. Remember, these are all volunteers, they're not paid. But either way, it was, again, maybe a reactionary thing that the car was on fire, they need to go help. But, I mean, it was a misjudgment of the century, not seeing Lando coming down a rather long straight.
I wonder how much, you know, we're, like you say, they're volunteers. I wonder how much going in their head was the Grosjean fire. And obviously, you know, you saw that Perez, it was nowhere near as bad. But in their head, maybe, you know, they saw a car on fire. They've just been through a very shocking... We've, you know, had a very shocking incident that we've seen, and this person thinks I need to get over there and put this fire out, and not, and like you say, made a terrible judgment call to run across the track, which luckily we were under double waved yellows, I think. So like, luckily Lando was just pretty much cruising in third gear, but yeah, it was awful to see. But you know, thank goodness nothing came of it, because it would have been absolutely horrendous. It was a very strange race with incidents like that, where I'll be honest, I was just happy to see the end of it when something like that happened and everyone be in one piece.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, Michael Massey has come out and spoken about the marshal running across the track and said, you know, undoubtedly the marshal reacted on instinct. They're told, you know, under no circumstances should you cross the track. That's why we've got marshals that, you know, dotted around either side of the track for things like this. But yeah, obviously, I think it must have been that he had seen the accident previously with Grosjean and the extent of the fire that can be caused from a Formula One car and panicked. I think that's the only thing. But at the same time, we shouldn't have marshals running across the track. There's an incident which happened several decades ago of a similar thing. Marshal running across the track with a fire extinguisher and gets wiped out and kills both the driver and the marshal. So, and that's not something I just gloss over, you know, as a something that happened. Like, it's obviously a completely tragic accident, and none of us ever wish any harm to come to the marshals that volunteer their time, or, you know, drivers and things like that. But at the end of the day, these cars go blimmin' fast, and even under double yellows, if you're, you know, you come into contact with an F1 car, it's going to be a pretty big disaster.
Absolutely. Well, okay. Shall we move to another topic?
Because it's a bit morbid, isn't it?
The race. The race that happened.
Yeah, let's talk about the actual race now. And my three-word race review, which is to do with, let's just say it, Perez doomed whatever. Of course, this is to do with Sergio Perez not having a drive next year, still not confirmed anything. He had a very weird press conference last night, which wasn't really a press conference, and he didn't know he was live, and he kept playing the same trailer over and over. Very odd. But in terms of the actual race itself, Sergio Perez had an absolutely brilliant one. He was in third the entire time. Very comfortable, kept Alex Albon at bay. Quite weird that Perez and Albon were the two fighting pretty much on track, even though, when they're both fighting essentially for this Red Bull seat, apparently. Although I think it's done. You know, that's the reason for my Perez doomed whatever. If he'd finished third, if he hadn't finished third, he's not going to Red Bull, in my opinion. Now, I think Red Bull are very much behind Alex Albon. Flacca Pinto says, what do you guys think of the chances Albon stays in Red Bull after this race? The podium is a little too late. So Flacca clearly thinks that Albon isn't staying. I think Alex is. It was a better performance from Albon. I know he crashed in FP2, I think it was. But in terms of his race pace was okay. I mean, half a minute off Max Verstappen is something that Albon will take after 57 laps of the Bahrain Grand Prix. So it was better from him. It was racier. He was up there in qualifying, even though Red Bull did have quite a significant quali advantage over the rest of the midfield. It was similar to Mugello in a lot of ways, that Red Bull were good. Albon was okay. And he managed to snatch a podium with Perez's failure. But I don't think it would have changed anything at all if Perez had or hadn't finished that race.
Yeah, it was a solid drive from Albon. Like you say, it wasn't, you know, it wouldn't be fair to say that it was the greatest drive of all time, because it's just not even, it's just not, because he's, like you say, he's 30 seconds off his teammate. But that is the drive that, you know, and a solid result that Red Bull want to be seeing every week. But I personally agree that we said it in the watch along before the race, that it does seem like Albon is secured now. It certainly feels that way. I mentioned it in the watch along that Red Bull recently announced that Alex Albon has become a Wings for Life ambassador, which is Red Bull's charity. Now, you've got to assume that you're not going to make a driver ahead of your charity and then fire them 2 weeks later. It just seems
unless
very
you went
odd.
To AlphaTauri.
Yeah.
Still a Red Bull program, isn't it?
I guess. But it really does seem that way. And I've also seen a lot of rumours about Perez, how the money that Perez brings is actually a conflict, because he brings a massive mobile phone network and money with him. But Red Bull already have a mobile phone network and lots of sponsorship money, far more than what Perez is earning. So that kind of nulls that out a little bit. But yeah, I'm 80%, maybe even 90% sure Alex is staying at Red Bull. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah, I think when we were all discussing who could go to Red Bull, you know, a couple of months ago, although Albon's performance have not been ideal, in fact, far from ideal, I'd also think that Red Bull are being maybe a little bit cautious, because they're getting some pretty bad press, especially when like Gasly won at Monza and it kept being brought up, you know, how poorly Red Bull treated him and chucked him out, and now he's onto better things. So, I mean, I'm sure at the end of the day, they would probably rather put a driver in a seat because of talent. But I think if they were just to boot out Albon and say, you know, you've had your chance, sling your hook, you're out, sooner or later, people are actually going to get quite upset with Red Bull for just taking a young, promising driver, chucking them into the Red Bull, and then spitting them out when they're, you know, done with them. So I'd like to think that they'll keep Albon on and nurture him, bring back that confidence that he's, you know, undoubtedly lost this year. We saw after the FP2 crash that he had, his attitude just seemed really odd. And I put something out on Twitter, because he said it's just one of those things. And loads of people were like, well, what's he expected to say? But you shouldn't be having an attitude like that when you've just completely demolished your car, that your poor team is going to have to rebuild piece for piece overnight and try and get back to you. You shouldn't be just, you know, oh, one of those things, just so casual about it. So I think just from looking at his attitude, he's so ready for the season to be over. And I hope that they do bring him back next year, because we all know that Albon is better than what he is currently showing.
Indeed. Let's see if he can actually find the pace maybe next year if he does get re-signed, because if he continues on this level and then there's a few midfield teams that start picking up the pace, especially in 2022, I don't think Albon will have a very long career at Red Bull unless he can get to sort of Mark Webber levels, where he can win a few races, beat Vettel, that kind of partnership. Even Verstappen and Ricciardo, like there are drivers out there that can match Verstappen on their day. And if Albon is constantly half a minute behind, I don't think he'll stay there for much longer. But there is a huge tie influence at the top of Red Bull, so I'm sure that helps as well in Alex's case. But either way, we'll see. We've only got a couple of races to go until we find out who Red Bull are going to go with, hopefully. And then this whole speculation business can end. Let's talk about a few other things. There was a big result for McLaren, P4 and 5, which was, well, I think we'll get into your predictions, which, Katie, you had a real disaster.
I don't want to talk about it.
I actually, to be fair, when it happened, I thought you'd said McLaren. I was like, that is an absolute worldie from you. It wasn't. But yeah, big result for McLaren and a disaster for Racing Point. Of course, Stroll ended up upside down after Danny Kvyat on the inside of him there. And then, obviously, Perez having that engine failure. So, Binyamin underscore Aloni says, where are McLaren? They say their car is worse than Racing Point and Renault, but when they don't have really bad luck, they get good results. So I don't know where to place them. Worse car, better drivers? Nah, I think that's... Well, you won't get the answer. Let's put it that way. Like you ask us this, Binyamin Aloni, but we don't know. But what I think is that some tracks favour McLaren, some tracks favour Renault, and some tracks favour Racing Point. I think Racing Point fundamentally have had a better car, probably. I don't think they're miles down the road. But yeah, I think there's just been certain tracks that have suited certain teams, which has been exciting for the midfield.
Yeah, I think McLaren have certainly made the most of bad results. I personally think Racing Point should be a lot further ahead than they are of the likes of McLaren and Renault, but obviously a lot of that was bad luck. You know, Stroll got taken out the race and Perez had a retirement from an amazing position. But yeah, it just seems to change every week, and that is what we love about the midfield. I mean, this amazing battle for third in the constructors and not just that, fourth in the drivers championship. We put up a graphic the other day, and you know, you've got Ricardo, I think it's Ricardo, Perez, Leclerc, Sainz, Norris, Albon, correct me if I've forgotten someone, but all, I think it's like 15-17 points, something like that, separating all of them for fourth place. And I do think it is just car dependent, and like you say, we will never know. We cannot actively say yes, Lando and Sainz are way better than blah blah blah. It's just not how Formula One works. We just will never know.
I totally agree with both of your points there, guys. I think, like you say, there have been circuits which some circuits suit cars better than others, which is normally always going to happen unless you're driving a Mercedes and you just win everything. But
well, we'll see with Van Dorn.
But I don't think that I think McLaren have good drivers. I don't think they're, you know, the two best drivers on the grid. I think they are very talented, but then look at Renault, for example. Daniel Ricciardo, I think he's in the form of his life at the moment, better than when he was at Red Bull. But it's very easy to sit here and say, like, oh, well, these people are good here and these people are good there, but it's what's making it so exciting for the midfield is that you'll rock up to a weekend and you can't really like put money on what is going to happen with the midfield.
We need that at the front, don't we?
Yeah.
We do. Yeah, the midfield battles were pretty good in the Bahrain Grand Prix as well. It's a weird one. Like, we haven't really actually spoken much about what happened in the race because it
almost seems irrelevant.
It does seem very irrelevant.
Yeah, it's not to disrespect,
especially
anyone,
with the fact that it was a rubbish race as well. When we did get underway. An odd one. But let's do ABCDEF1 anyway and see if we can get through some grades, even though I'm pretty sure I've forgotten that some of these people even race. So play the jingle, Tommy.
Now it's time for ABCDEF1.
Right, let's just fly through this. Just purely for the fact that we have a graph at the end of the year. So,
yeah.
Should we just rate them? Okay, Hamilton.
A star.
Couldn't really have done anything more, right?
Yeah.
He didn't lead, was it one lap when he pitted one lap earlier than Verstappen, even covered off the undercut?
Yeah.
Which was interesting. So A star. Bottas?
I've given him a C because he's definitely unlucky, but he made a bad start and you kind of make your own luck in these things, don't you?
Yeah. Puncher at the start, well, restart, puncher at the end. He said his car design hindered overtaking, probably because the Mercedes are not used to being in the midfield. They normally just used to zooming off as soon as the lights go out.
We saw it at Monza, didn't we? Exactly the same thing, where he couldn't get through the pack.
But Hamilton could.
Hamilton could.
Spicy.
Leclerc, well, he had a good start, and then just the Ferrari just didn't have any pace, did it, really?
Where did he... Let me just check where he finished.
He finished 10th.
He got a point. Yeah. It was not well suited to them. I'd give him a B.
B. Or, if you're comparing it to Vettel, I think B's fair.
Yeah.
Sebastian Vettel, I mean, he spun on his own at the start of the race, pretty much. The FOM didn't even show it.
Very weird, that was.
Yeah, because I saw him tumble down the order. I was like, he's spun. He's 100% spun. But we never saw a replay. We didn't see anything, did we?
Yeah, is that the clip that was doing the rounds on Twitter where there's no...
Uphill left-hander.
Yeah, uphill left-hander. It doesn't hit the curb or anything. That car just looks like an absolute handful. And he's just not with that car, one with that car at all, is he?
So where did Vettel finish?
He finished
13th
from 15th. I think it's a D.
Yeah, D.
Agreed. Verstappen A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Albon B.
Yeah.
I said C.
Yeah.
C?
I said kind of C plus B territory.
Yeah. For Albon?
I said, well, he did well to get the podium, but that was only from luck because Checo had his engine fail. And then he also had a massive crash in FP2 and completely could have ruined his weekend there. So, yeah, I've said C.
We've just said he's had a great weekend with the fact that he's got, well, was fourth, was running pretty well, and we're giving him a C.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, he's still quite a long way off. I mean, I've written BC, but we don't give out B minuses.
Oh, right. Well, Tommy, you're the deciding factor here.
B.
Okay. That's okay. I think C is very harsh for a podium, even though it was luck. I get it, but still much better than what we've seen previously. Carlos Sainz.
A star, easy.
A star.
What a drive! He finished,
was it fifth in the end?
Yeah.
15th to 5th.
15th to 5th. That's a pretty stunning drive, and especially considering qualifying wasn't his fault. Mm. So yeah, that's an A star for Sainz. Lando Norris, an A.
Yeah.
An A, yeah, not. Yeah.
Ricardo, he did a cool move, turn 8. I can't remember who it was on, but there was some crazy midfield battling at some point.
He seemed to spend the whole race trying to get past Ocon. That's my takeaway.
And what they're doing.
They were always coming out together, and then not really committing to just getting Ocon or whoever out the way and just letting them go. And it just seemed to cost them, really.
A couple of C's
for both of them, because Ocon did seem a bit more on the pace of Danny Ric.
He definitely did, actually. You know, in qualifying, he was closer.
Yeah,
like qualifying. Oh my goodness, they were literally so close.
2/1000th of a second. I can't even say that.
1/1000th. Okay, so a couple of C's for those guys. Gasly.
A.
B. Yeah, I said B.
Oh, you want B?
Finished 6th, which is a pretty stellar job in an AlphaTauri.
I said A, but...
Yeah, I think A is probably fairer. Oh,
yeah. I'm happy
Katie's
to go
like, I gave him a B. Pretty stellar job in an AlphaTauri.
Oh, dear.
God, you can't be pleased, can you, Katie? You can't be pleased. Kvyat.
I've given him a D.
D, fair 11th enough. But wasn't at fault for... Well, maybe both incidents, but definitely one incident with Grosjean. And, well, with Stroll, I think he was a little bit of fault with Stroll.
I'm slightly...
He got a penalty, didn't he, from the stewards?
Yeah, I feel like the Kvyat penalty maybe was a little bit of a reaction to from the FIA that's like... Because normally they're pretty chill with first lap contacts, and it was one of those things where Stroll really did sort of like cut in, didn't he, to the corner.
Did cut in, yeah.
And I think maybe the FIA were a little bit trigger happy with oh, there's been a horrible crash.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do react like that. Almost. Yeah, sometimes they do react a little bit like that. But I mean, it still wasn't a particularly great, you know, we can't say it was a great drive from him, so I think a D is fair.
No. Wasn't a great drive. Yeah, I think D is definitely fair, but definitely not at fault for the Grosjean incident. Raikkonen. No, Stroll. Stroll, we can't really rate, so should we give him a C? D?
It's hard to... Yeah, it's difficult with Stroll. He started 13th.
No, but that was due to a slip-up from Racing Point.
Yeah, they bottled it with his...
They screwed him up.
Oh, yeah, he said there was a miscommunication, didn't he? What was the miscommunication?
I think I just put the wrong set of tyres on, I think.
Wrong tyres on him, and then he didn't have enough time for two runs.
How strange. Okay, so C then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Raikkonen?
We've missed out Perez.
We've missed Checo.
Oh.
A star.
Whoops.
Done.
A star. Sorry. Yeah. It was so easy to sort. I didn't even decide to talk about it. A star for Perez.
Yeah.
Raikkonen.
Alphas are so hard to judge because they just have no pace and they just drive at every race unless they do something stellar. It's
a couple of C's.
17th to 5th for Raikkonen and 16th to 16th for Giovinazzi.
17th to 5th?
Sorry, 15th.
I was going to say, what? Signs? That you?
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of C's maybe. Can't really rate them. Magnussen?
C? B?
Where did he finish?
He finished 17th.
C then.
C.
Maybe even a D.
No, I think C because he had front wing damage, I think.
Okay. C for Magnussen. Grosjean, we're just going to give a C. We can't say anything for that, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Russell?
B.
Got into
maybe
Q2.
An A.
Yeah.
I think.
But then had the worst start in the world.
Yeah.
In the whole world.
Custom.
And then lost every single position he'd made up. I think it's a C.
Not a C. Come on.
He finished
12th in a Williams. You can't give him a C.
Oh, he finished 12th? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. I forgot about that.
Rewind.
If he recovers.
That's what I mean. I generally don't feel like this race happened.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't
weird.
It?
It's weird.
Okay. Oh, if he finished 12th, then B, yeah.
Two seconds clear of Latifi and qualify.
And Latifi?
Finished 14th.
D.
But.
Yeah. C?
Yeah, I think.
You're going C? I'd say D, but go for.
A D? No, let's go C. Let's not be too horrible.
Yeah, okay. I think that's a pretty good result in a Williams 14th.
Okay, Bahrain Grand Prix predictions. No problems with track limits.
I mean. No, because they did.
To be fair,
it.
They just went, lads, do what you want.
Yeah.
So. I think that's a point. And Albon back to being off the pace.
No. Not really. No, I wouldn't give that.
No, I wouldn't give it either. So 1 point for me. Katie.
Yes, so I had an absolute stinker. I said Bottas victory, so that went well. And then the one that I'm still going to claim, I meant to say McLaren's, but I know I actually didn't mean to say Renault. I said Renault are going to leave Bahrain third in the Constructors' Championship,
that
which obviously did not happen, and I want to skip over it, and we never talk of it again. Thank you, goodbye.
Bold claim, terrible claim. We move on.
Shocker.
0 points for Katie. Tommy, your two were, one was close, one was not.
Yeah. Latifi out-qualifies Russell. No. And Sainz, I'm such an idiot. Why'd you go four? I know, I always go top five, and then I was feeling cocky and like, Sainz is going to have an absolute banger here. Top four.
He would have finished top four easily.
Might have even got a podium. His pace was unbelievable. I'm an idiot. Sainz top four finish. He finished fifth.
Tommy's an idiot. No news there.
Yep.
Fans, InvestedPuppy47 says Vettel out-qualifies Leclerc. He did. And _Dino_ Hamilton finally has a DNF due to reliability. Incorrect. Sakir Grand Prix predictions. I have gone with the most overtakes all season and at least one Ferrari is lapped twice.
Can see that happening.
Ooh, yeah.
Katie?
I've said bad issues with traffic and qualifying as it's such a short lap. And then I've said drivers will moan that they get bored of driving the oval.
Oh my God, don't call it an oval, Katie. I did that earlier. I called it an oval and everyone was like, what is wrong with you? Even Alex Jakes tweeted me. Alex Jakes is on Twitter now and he said, here come the oval brigade.
Yeah.
I have on the podcast notes put oval in like little comma mark things.
You're still calling it an oval. But I feel like
I need to describe that a little bit better. I don't think the racing is going to be boring, but I just think that drivers are just going to be quite bored just literally doing like four corners.
Oh, get over it. They're driving F1 cars.
Okie dokie.
That wasn't to you, Katie. That was to the F1 drivers. Tommy.
No Red Bull in the top five, which means Verstappen will finish fifth. And and Russell out-qualified by teammate. Whether that's Latifi or Bottas,
oh,
we will find
come.
Out.
You are disgraceful.
Come on, I need a point. It's been a while.
I hope he goes to Mercedes and trounces Bottas now after your safe prediction. Fans, American... To be fair, if he stays at Williams, that's not going to come true. Fans, American Racing 7, Monza 2, a new winner, maybe a McLaren or Racing Point. Okay. And Fielding Rowan, Renault second row lockout.
They've gone big.
Ooh.
That is
fans
big.
Fans have gone big.
There we go. We've gone big. That's pretty much it. Thank you to everybody for watching and listening this WTF1 podcast. Sorry that the first half an hour was heavy, but felt like it needed to be addressed, everything that went on. And the miraculous slash not miraculous because it's really safe nowadays incident. But yeah, I don't think anybody would have expected anything else from this WTF1 podcast. And guys, any final thoughts?
I hope you enjoyed this one. And I guess I'll just say that at the end of the day, we're fans too, and we're shaken by things. And at the end of the day, we do our best to cover it in a way that we feel is right. And I hope that people respect that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty perfect. That hits a nail on the head. And obviously wishing Hamilton a speedy recovery from his coronavirus diagnosis.
Yeah, best wishes to Hamilton, best wishes to Grosjean. And yeah. We will see you all, well, for Internet's Best Reactions this weekend. Podcast again next week. And we'll see you very soon. So thanks, guys. And, hopefully we'll have an interesting, maybe a new race winner. That would be exciting, wouldn't it?
Would.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.